Well, this scene comes in part one of the book, and it's in the relatively early days of David and Laura's relationship. They've had a very sort of passionate, intense relationship. And Laura has actually got reason to believe that David might be about to finish with her, and she's very distressed about that. But he's rung her up unexpectedly one Saturday morning, and he's suggested going for a walk on the cliffs. David was striding hard. He had such long legs that our gaits were out of step. I stumbled on the uneven grass. I let his hand drop and moved away from him a little, not meaning anything in particular, just making myself more comfortable to walk. He stopped and looked at me. I stopped too. He appeared to be about to speak, then changed his mind and continued walking. I followed a little behind. He said something to me, but the wind caught his words and I didn't hear properly. Something about my kitchen. "What?" I said, raising my voice. He turned to me. The expression on his face was irritable. I said, "You know, girl, I just think it's a bit peculiar. You're so keen on washing up, but you never wipe the surfaces." "What?" I laughed. He leaned forward and grabbed me by the arms, bending me backwards. "Think it's funny, do you?" he said, mock menacing. Mock menacing was his habitual manner before sex. It was foreplay and a shared joke. When I wanted sex, I behaved mock defiantly, in a way I knew would provoke it. "You and whose army?" I shouted above the wind, derisively. "That's it," he yelled. "You're the bane of my life. You're going over." He slung one arm beneath me and wrenched me off balance. This, too, was a joke he had pulled several times on our walks together, grabbing me and dragging me towards the cliff edge. David had inherited his Aunt Lorraine's love of robust physical comedy. Pretending he was going to throw me off the cliff was a prank he never tired of. He was also fond of pointing at a button on my jacket mid-conversation, then flicking my nose with his finger when I looked down. This always made me smile, no matter how often he did it. When I got wise to the pointing at the button trick, he would invent new ways of getting me to look down, telling me I had a mark on my shirt, asking me about my brooch. It delighted him when I fell for it. Before, on the clifftop, I'd always shrieked in alarm quickly enough to make him stop, but that day something was different. Perhaps I had heard the joke once too often, or I was simply in a provocative mood after his recent neglect, because instead of shrieking for mercy, I yelled into the wind, "I'll take you over with me!" I wanted to push him, to see how far he would go, to unsettle him after his fortnight of silence. He pulled me right up to the cliff's edge, where it sloped sharply upwards and there was a dangerous overhang. Even then, I let him do it, thinking still that it was the old joke, that it meant nothing. But as we reached the edge and the first tickle of real alarm fluttered in my stomach, he did something he had never done before. With one swift movement of his arms and shoulders, he spun me round, so that instead of holding me face to face, he was grasping me from behind, both arms wrapped round me at chest height, and holding my arms pinioned to my side. He bent forward, so that I had to bend forward too, and I could see right over the edge, to where the waves heaved and chopped against the rocky shore, and the brown foam frothed beneath us. There were great, jagged lumps of concrete dumped among the rocks at this part of the coast, deposited years ago to protect the bottom of the cliffs from erosion. They were as big as cars, their corners and edges pointing menacingly upwards. If you went over at this point, you wouldn't stand a chance. Your skull would split as easily as an eggshell. I let out a cry of fear, real fear, out into the freezing wind and air, and shrieked his name. I was dangling completely off balance, as helpless as a puppet, with only his weight behind me as counterbalance. I couldn't believe how reckless he was being. Beneath us, the waves leapt and broke apart over the concrete blocks, grey beneath but slimy with algae. The sea smelt acrid. Gulls shrieked and dived above us. "Scared?" he yelled into my ear. Are you scared? You should be, LD. David! David! I hollered. Oh my God, we'll go over. He didn't know the cliffs as well as I did. He was misjudging the overhang. For the first time since I had known him, it came to me that there was a touch of real lunacy in him. A lack of caution that could not be explained by impetuosity, a small link or wire missing in his brain in the place where most people tempered their impulses with the knowledge of the effect those impulses had on others. Then, just at the point when I was departing from him in my head, balking at my own collusion with his behaviour, he straightened and pulled back from the edge. We are, he said. He wasn't yelling any more. He still had his arms wrapped tight around me from behind. His face was buried in my hair. When he spoke, his voice was broken. I heard his words through my hair. We're going over. I've decided. Okay? Okay? He pulled me back, away from the cliff edge, and turned me to him, then held me out at arm's length. I was shuddering from the cold, from fear, from disbelief. There was a moment when we stared at each other, him still holding me away from him. I gazed at him, a question in my look. He gave the smallest of nods. I burst into tears. He drew his head back, laughed at me, suddenly the old David again. He pushed me away from him, then grabbed me again and gave me a small shake. It's not supposed to make you cry, LD. It's supposed to make you happy.